Blog Talk Radio.
Guitar for tonight, this special episode of Morelia Python Radio, and play a little Christmas tune for you. There you go.
Yes. The intro was too long. I drank all the eggnog that I spiked. Therefore,
right.
I am now useless. So, yeah.
You know, when you get in the zone, you got to get in the zone. You know what I mean? You got to feel it. So, you know, once that guitar is in my hand, there's nothing I can do.
Bring the guitar to the next show. You need
That's
to bring
right.
the guitar to the next show. You just stand next to the Morelia Python table, and then Eric standing next to it playing a guitar the entire time. I wouldn't be able to look at you. I would just have to turn the opposite direction. So.
you didn't think these fat, stubby little fingers could move that fast, did you?
Holy no, my God. No, well, you know, you hobbits are just, you know, by all means, so talented.
That's right. So here we are, last episode of Moralia Python Radio for 2013. It's just me and Owen hanging out. Want to call in, if you're if you're feeling like you want to talk about that, whatever, call in numbers 347-215-7359.
The phone lines are now open. Call now. There's a big flashing light in here. Nobody else see it but us. But yeah, it's great.
Well, you know, I had to make room in the Moralia Python studios here to bring guitar in and set the amp up.
Guitar is a big thing,
true.
We have the sacrifices we make for you people is ridiculous. But
well, I could always start the episode outright and just saying that I have as much passion for guitar music as I have for reptiles. But
And you don't suck. So I mean, you.
Well, thanks.
You're welcome. I think on the way back from ICATS, you were playing some guitar, and I'm like, this is pretty good. Who the hell is playing? You're like, I am. I'm like, bullshit. Bullshit. And you're like, yeah, this is my stuff. I'm like, you just jam out to your own tunes, and you're like, yes. So I'm like, yeah, all right, well, whatever.
Carry on.
Carry on. Don't let me stop you. But, you know, it's definitely very cool.
So there's a couple things that I guess we should hit on throughout the episode, but I guess the big thing that I saw is U.S. ARC. They decided to challenge the decision way back in, what was it now, 2012? What's on there? Burmese python, rock python, Indian python, a couple of different types.
Yellow anaconda.
To the Lacey Act, and they decided to go forward with it, but they need money. What I would recommend, what I do is, if you go over there, you can donate in increments of $5. And I know this time of year it's hard to do that, but I mean, $5, come on, man.
You can find that change in your sofa after your Christmas party, all right?
Yeah, exactly. But if everybody did that, man.
We'd be done, yeah.
Yeah, what an impact.
And it would be nice to kind of bloody the nose of those other guys who are trying to take away our animals. So you take away those five that they've already put on, they're going to seriously reconsider what they can do moving forward, because I know that there was some contestation about the other five that they're after, including the boa constrictor, and I've talked to a bunch of friends of mine, and I'm adamant in my belief that with boa goes the rest of the world, because you can make cases for some of these other animals, and you kind of have these distinct stopping points of, well, they're large and dangerous, they're invasive, this, but a boa constrictor that, in my opinion, has no reason to get rid of boa constrictor. If that goes, then everything else is free game. So it's don't sit around going like, well, I only keep these, I should be fine.
Right.
No, you gotta. We should all stand together and kind of kick it backwards, and then we'll be fine. We can go back to bickering and stuff, because then we can all keep what we want. So
exactly.
Otherwise, we'll be corn snake breeders.
Yeah, and even then, they'll come after that. I guess the big thing that I would make sure that everybody understands is that, you would think that they just want Burmese pythons, and then you would think that, it's reticulated pythons. And, I think my personal feeling is that I think that we as the reptile community or halter herpetoculture, I think we need to do a little better job in policing ourselves making sure that we're being responsible and responsible people are kept in the hobby and irresponsible people are removed
kicked
from
the fuck out.
Yeah, exactly. Well, or you can say,
dude,
oh, right?
don't sell the scummy sons of bitches. There, done. So, that's the way it rides. And don't buy from scummy sons of bitches. Yeah, Jesus Christ. Sorry, passion is flowing on this end as well. Anyway,
Wow, I know how to hit Owen's button.
Now I know what you feel like.
But yeah, I mean, I think that, so I guess to a certain extent, maybe you could argue because of size or because of the, I mean, even if you're not talking about, I believe, my personal belief is that if you can take care of said animal, you should be able to own said animal. But I think that, you know, I'm not necessarily against, say, a permit system. But to me, that permit system should come within our – it should be what we propose rather than what somebody
yes.
tells us what our permit system should be.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So it's more about being proactive than reactive.
Yes. And, I mean, you can sit here and say that these things are dangerous and that a permit system's in place or should be put in place for these pythons. The biggest red flag I got here is – why are there no venomous on these lists? Like you're telling me that you're all sitting here about the safety of the people, yet Mamba is nowhere near these lists. Like, what are we doing? Why is it that no one's like smacked these people across the face and been like, "The hell are you talking about?" So it's one of those things that just kind of needs to be clearly they're using scare tactics, and now it worked, you know, and now the next step is smacking them back into the little hole. So
yeah, I think that I think one of the things that often the reptile community, I think it's really comes from a good place rather than a bad place, but unfortunately it shows itself in a bad way, and I think it's similar to what goes on in just politics in general. You know, you have two sides, three sides, and they fight with each other. Meanwhile, the people that are in charge do whatever the hell they want anyway. So it really doesn't make a difference. But we're so occupied in arguing about what we think is right or wrong. Meanwhile, we should be standing together. And that was kind of where I was getting at with what I was saying about, you know, just because you have a corn snake or a bearded dragon or whatever, and you think that you're not on the list or nobody's coming for your pet or what you keep or breed, I would disagree with that because eventually they're coming for everything, man. They're not going to stop and say, oh, well, yeah, you can keep your bearded dragon, but we got to get
rid of it. There are some factions of these people that don't think anybody should have any kind of pet. So think about it that way. You know, eventually they're going to stop at cats and dogs. So
yeah, there was a pretty good Michael Cole posted it up this morning, and it was just talking about
that.
Animal rights against animal welfare and what the difference is. And like what they were saying is, and I could agree with this, is like animal welfare comes down to making sure that animals are taken care of in a humane way and not mistreated in any type of way. And I'm for that. I don't want the mistreatment of any animals. But
there's two different schools. There's
animal
the animal
life.
Rights. Yeah, there's animal rights that think that the animals deserve the same rights as human, and there's animal welfare. Animal welfare is that every animal deserves to be treated with respect and kindness and not, like, you know, chained to a post and starved. So, you know, everybody kind of confuses the two. Like, I am for animal welfare. And I've got a bunch of people who are like, really? I'm like, no. I'm for not keeping my snake in, like, a tank outside. I'm for, you know, letting my dog come indoors. I'm, you know, that's animal welfare. Animal rights is that he has every right to a human. It's not true. So
exactly. And you know, it's funny, but these, you know, like PETA and Humane Society of the United States, groups like that, they really try to, you know, they're trying to push their agenda down your throat, and you think that they're coming across and trying to. You know, every time I say it to my family all the time, it's like when you see that that freaking commercial come on and Sarah McLachlan is singing, you know.
Oh, my God.
Poor little kitty cat in the cage and looks like it's crying and whatnot. And, you know, I'm not I don't believe that animals should be treated that way. However, they're not being truthful with their what they're doing with those. And these groups are just impossible. to fight, because I mean they have so much money and
yeah,
you know,
and financial banking from a lot of rich people who, it's, here's the thing, and I know what, I never try to tell people that it's a bad thing to donate to a cause for animals, but if you're going to do it, walk that check down to the local shelter and hand it to them, because those are the people that need it. If you
yeah.
give the Humane Society, or if you give to a bunch of other stuff, the Humane Society shows up with a trailer full of crates after a giant disaster, because that's where the cameras are, and it shows that they're working and doing things and da 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 da. Most of the money that they get goes to paying lawyers and special interest things like that, and you know, their CEOs and things like that. So the money you give them may not necessarily go to what you need it. If you really want to help out the animals that are in need, find out where your local animal shelter, ASPCA, is, and bring them the money, because they're the ones who are going to buy that money. Is then going to be used to pay their staff, which is going to help clean and socialize the animals, buy food, pay the vet, get medicine. That's where the money needs to go, not to these people. And you know what? If HSUS gave a damn about the welfare of animals, why is it they don't pick it out the rattlesnake roundups? So, you know, I've had it up to my eyeballs with those idiots.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sure everybody's heard on various radio shows or on forums or whatnot, all the different, you know, arguments. And I would hope that at this point in time that you would know. But again, it really, you know, I say this all the time, but, you know, it's kind of like if people are bitching about what's going on in politics today and they didn't vote. You know, I can't even engage somebody in a conversation about politics if they didn't even vote, because if they don't vote, then what the hell are you complaining about? So I guess my whole point is that if you're not donating the U.S. ARC, I don't care if it's a dollar. If there was, you know, if 10,000 people today donated a dollar, that's $10,000 that U.S. ARC didn't have to go and fight for your rights to keep your animals, you know? And even if you think you're off the grid or whatever the case may be, you have to do something. And hey, maybe you don't have money, but you have animals. You know, I got to give a big shout out to Jordan Russell. I don't know if you saw what he did, but he's from the California Breeders Union. He's been a guest on the show. But
yes,
what a great job that they did. They raised $41,156.
Yeah.
I mean, kudos
That's
to them. There should be more people doing that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that is not bad at all. And they had a bunch of quality animals. And I think he was prowling around yelling at people, this is not for you to get your best deal. It's a charity auction. So, you know, more power to Jordan to getting that stuff going. So,
yep, absolutely.
We'll see what's up. Maybe we'll have to do a split, a dual auction at Carpet Fest this year for a few different things. Too many charities are near and dear to the to Morelia Python Radio.
Yeah, I've been toying with the idea of maybe doing you know, some type of auction like he did. I really don't know what it entails or anything like that. You know, if somebody gave me $1,000 for a zebra jag, I would give that to U.S. ARC, you know, one of the zebra jags I have from 2012.
Just promise an animal that once it sells it goes to U.S. ARC. And then you got to follow through with it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, again, I might not be able to give $1,000 at this current moment, but I could give one of those animals that somebody could pay $1,000 and then
right.
there you go. You know,
of course,
or 800
the,
or whatever it is.
Yeah. There's also the, there's the auction that's going to be at Tinley, which is always good.
Sure, but I guess I think the thing is that these guys need a lot of money. You know, this isn't like
hey, lawyers, good lawyers are expensive. So, you know, what we're looking at right now is how much does it cost to hire a team of really good lawyers? So
right. So if you want to change something, if you want to do something, if you want to make a difference, and you know, all I can tell you is that, you know, step up, you know, do something, take the time to you know, because that counts, you know, and it counts. If one person does it, then another person does it. It counts, man. Don't think that with every little part that you would do in anything in this community in a positive way wouldn't count. I mean, make a difference. I don't know what else I can say on that.
Yeah, I would auction off the make me do a maternal incubation clutch. You know, if it reaches a certain dollar amount, I will maternally incubate one clutch. So every $1,000, I maternally incubate one clutch. So,
that would be awesome.
That's right. Gauntlet dropped. Do it.
Hey, question here coming in. Maybe you'd be able to answer this because I don't really know this, Owen.
Go for it.
Our buddy Carpet Cartel.
Yes.
He's asking if there's ever been a fatality by a boa constrictor in the U.S. Ever hear that?
Fatality via boa constrictor?
Yeah. Like,
the problem is that there's not a crap ton of fatalities via snake. I think I saw a breakdown of, you know, the next time somebody tells you that they're afraid of sharks, and they had a breakdown of how many deaths per year there are via sharks. And I know that snakes are below that somehow. So, I mean, you are more likely to get hit by lightning while driving a car, like, wrapped in tinfoil than you are to get killed by a snake, statistic-wise.
Right.
But the ones that have fatalities on them, I know for a fact Burmese do. They have several fatalities. I know for also a fact that I believe articulated python does, but I'm not exactly sure. I know that there was a scrub python-related death, but I don't think it was in the United States, but it was a Maruki. And, of course, the venomous have their they have some. They're the ones that have the most slashes because, you know, those are the ones that usually do it. But I'm not exactly sure if there has been one by a boa. I imagine if there was, it was one of those extenuating circumstances. Like, I know one of the Burmese python kills was because the dude was on cocaine and drunk, opened the berm's cage, slipped, hit his head, and then fell on top of the berm, and the berm constricted him around the neck and killed him.
Okay.
So it was one of those, you know, you're asking for it at that point, if you ask me. That's like, you know, it's like going shark diving wrapped in fish guts. You know, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
It bit me, no shit. So that's why I always tell people, you know, if you're ever drinking, lock the damn snake room. You can always really tell the real keepers from the dopes that just want attention is if they're drinking and smoking and hanging out with their snake at the same time. You know, it's if you're drunk off your ass and you're fucking with your snakes, you're asking to get bit. And bit
that's
hard.
Bad news. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you're sitting there with your snake wrapped around you and you got pictures of you like smoking pot and things like that, again, you're just asking for attention and stupidity because some snakes can get irritated by smoke and they'll bite the first thing that moves. So, you know, it's if you're going to be doing stupid stuff, don't leave the snakes in the damn cage.
Right.
So.
Yeah, you should never handle when you're drinking.
No. It's like the people who use their boa constrictors and other things for props at Halloween and crap like that. No point. Don't do it. Leave them in the cage.
Right.
They don't want to do it. So, yeah, I don't know if there's been a fatality by a boa. I know there's been a few things. I actually think there was, now that I think about it. And it was
I tried to look it up, and the only thing that I could find was in 2012 or 2010, it said that a man was strangled by his boa when he was taking it out to show somebody.
See, the problem is, though, is, like, you're also running on the things that, do they really know what they're talking about? Was it a boa or what? But the one I believe I heard of was, and this is a funny one, I think, some woman was messing around with a boa and it bit her and actually, I think, punctured her breast implant or something like that, and she became septic.
Oh, wow.
I believe. I think I heard that someplace. I could be just lying, but
Okay.
Yeah. There's gotta be, there might be one on the books. I mean, you know, dude, there's probably Death via Hedgehog somewhere on the books, someplace.
Well,
somehow.
Yeah,
I mean, so yeah, I mean,
there's dogs. You know, I mean, any, you gotta understand anything that you see, you know, as far as when you're keeping an animal, I mean, my personal opinion is there's, it's just like if you go on a ride, it's just like if you get in your car. I mean, there's the chance that you're going to get into an accident and you're going to die. You know, I mean, that's just...
That's how I make my living, damn it. So,
yeah.
You know, you run that gambit, you know. And there's no, I don't think there's any people who understand that more than venomous people. I mean, they know that at any moment they could be cashing that check. It's, so this is a risk you run.
Did you hear the lady got bit by the boa constrictor on TMZ?
I have not, maybe. I don't know where I hear these things.
Nice.
Yeah, well.
Whatever. Oh, that's cool. go to usarc.org. I believe that those guys over there are going to do another fundraiser, but I think they said to stay tuned for when they're going to do it because they want to settle up this one. But I guess what I would recommend there's a group. Let me just pull it up real quick so I can give you the exact name of the group. I want to say it's Reptile and Amphibian Auctions.
Yes.
Go over and join that group, and, you know, you can
bid,
or you can, you know, donate an animal. Mm-hmm. Did you see the Bolens pythons that they put up? I'm like, son of
a bitch. I did. Speaking of Bolens, let us discuss our good friend and friend of the show, Mr. Casper.
Oh,
did
yeah.
Did you see his Bolens? Yeah. Did you see that?
Lucky, lucky.
Yeah. Lucky,
that's all right.
Bastard.
When he breeds those in about 5 years from now, I'll be sure to import a group of them over here.
Although, I'll be sure to get them. Don't worry. We'll get our master CITES.
Yeah.
So.
Well, they import them now, so, well, you know.
It's whatever.
That's good. Congratulations to him because Captain Born and Bred, I mean, you can't get any better than that. And,
you really can't. I mean, Jesus, I'm surprised he was able to land that crap. So.
And he has a trio, right? Is it a trio?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he had to give up his hammer for him.
Hammer gone.
Hammer gone, yeah. He gave up the hammer for Bolens. Shame.
Yeah. So let's the next thing I have on the agenda. What's your favorite show of 2013? What's the one
mine?
You got excited about? The one that you said, man, I can't believe I get to talk to this person.
Easy Eugene Bissett.
Eugene Bissett.
He was a riot at ICAST, and then when he called me a non-proven breeding male, I nearly lost my shit for, like, the first time in many episodes where I couldn't breathe. So, yeah.
Wow.
That one I found hilarious.
Okay. That's good. Yeah, he's a good guy. I was glad that we got to not only meet him in ICAST, but talk to him. And, you know, it's really, really cool. Well, my dog just fell off the couch. All right.
Wait, that's a major thing for your dogs. I mean, that's like, what, a 12-foot plummet head first for those guys?
Oh, poor guy.
Aww.
What the heck?
Yeah. Yeah, like, you know, you can walk under my dog without even touching his stomach. But
yeah, exactly. You know, it's funny that you bring up, let's see, I wanted to put out a disclaimer because we got an email today
email.
From Chris.
Yeah.
And he's from Mystic Reptiles.
Yes.
I guess at some point, I don't remember when we did this, but he says the main reason that I'm writing is that we have a few incidents where I've been referred to on your podcast as Mystic Exotics.
Which is a different place.
Yes.
Mystic Exotics is the other.
There's a lady, I think she's in Washington, and she, I think she does breed carpets too, but she's Mystic
Exotics. Yeah, but isn't there also Mystic, isn't that also, what's his name with the white lips? Aren't they Mystic too?
Well, yeah, that's who I'm talking about, Chris. Chris,
Right. Yeah.
He's from Florida, and he works with White Lips. I know he's big time into retics. I know he works with, what else does he work with? Ring pythons. He works with,
yes, he does. I want those. Again.
Other group. What's that group? Totally slipped my mind. The one that's like the ball python in Africa.
Angolan?
Yeah, that's it. Angolan. So I know he works with them, too.
That was a hard one. Yeah, Jesus.
Yeah.
Those other ball python-looking thingies.
Yeah, so I just want to make sure everybody understands that Chris, that was on the show, he is Mystic Reptiles. And you can check out his website at mysticreptiles.com. So, I want to make sure that everybody knows who we're talking about when we're talking about him. But favorite show, 2013. So yours is Eugene Bissett. That's a tough one for me. There's been so many cool episodes and people. I would probably have to say, you know, we've had Nick and on, but I think probably my favorite was probably Nick and Justin together.
That was
probably my favorite because
that was fun.
I really look up to those two guys, and I think that you know, with them writing the books and all that they've done and. You know, I don't know. They're just a wealth of knowledge. I feel like what's the word I'm looking for? I just get mesmerized when they're talking. You know, I remember when Justin was giving his talk at Tinley, and I was just like, "Wow, he's dreamy."
There was music as you stared at him and said, "Whoa, buddy,
same with
whoa."
Nick, but- When Nick was talking,
married men, all right? This is, whoa. Jesus.
Yeah. And talking when Nick gave his talk, too, but to have those two guys on the show was a good time for me.
Another good show is for my kids.
Yeah.
That disintegrated into craziness in the span of 12 minutes. And
yeah.
I'm pretty sure I was hammered, but, you know, that's one of those things. So that whole experience going down there was fun as hell. And I love it that Eugene keeps asking us every time we talk to him, when's the next one? Like, we know. It's that we're keeping it from him. So.
Right. So let me see where I put this post, but, you know, we put it up there and I was asking people what they thought their favorite episode was, and I know I'm trying to find it here, but I know Bill Segal, he got a lot of love for his episode. I know Jordan Russell was another one. Man, I can't find it. What the heck? I'm a total failure. Oh, here we go.
You are. You had all week to prep for this, and here we are again looking at morons.
Yeah, I know, right? Jordan Russell, he got a lot of love. I know Buddy, he liked the broadcast from iCast, which was cool.
Yep. Which was great because he stole the phone from me, and then I got another phone, And yeah, isn't that how that works somehow? But he took my phone and ran off, and then I got like Zach Baez's phone, and it was pandemonium ensued. So
yeah, I would have to say my next favorite guy to talk to, and probably because I talk to him a lot of time via text message on probably every couple of days or so. But Rob Stone, I really like talking to that guy. I don't, you know, he keeps a whole bunch of different species, and I don't know, he just has a really cool way to look at things, you know. And I heard him talk on Reptile Radio a while back, and you know, when we had him come on and chat with us, I thought his approach, his thoughts, you know, well thought out, and you know, just overall good stuff. So I don't know. What about you? Any other ones that stand out to you as highlights? It's hard, man. There's some good shows.
It was a good year. I mean, there were barely any times where you and I were just like, so, what's up?
Yeah, we
are. And, you know, that's, yeah. And there was, that's just the way that it happened. And, you know, I liked the roundtables that we have. Even the Chondro roundtable, where I thought I was going to be completely useless, was fun. I really enjoyed going on to Corrales Radio this year. That was great because we kind of got the other side of it. That was awesome. So
yeah, that was fun.
Yeah.
Not to interrupt it here, but we have a caller. Hopefully it's not a crank call or anything, but let's see. 484 area code. You have a question or a comment?
Son of a bitch.
No, I'm just listening. Jim from Morgantown just popping in. Little surprised what I'm hearing about my son right now.
My dad.
And, can we expand on the fact I was hammered or what exactly?
No. What happens at ICAST stays at ICAST. So that's no.
Listen. I'm not going to tell your mother or anything like that. I just want to know.
Shut
exactly.
the hell up, old man. This is going around. God, for the love of God.
It's a serious situation here. I've got one
yeah,
more brother.
God damn it. We're not airing this shit out over the.
Well, I think I've sufficiently done what I was supposed to do this evening, which is totally embarrassing, so that's very good. So,
mission accomplished.
Listen, mission accomplished. Just flying under the radar, you know, a little 484
action. I'm taking away your phone, I swear to God.
No. Next
every
time.
Every Tuesday, I'm going to start stealing
a payphone. It'll be from a Philadelphia 215 payphone, is what I'm going to be talking to you about. Gentlemen, listen, I just called in to just let you know that personally my favorite show is any show I'm on, by the way, just to say that.
Well, here you go.
He does
number one, number
two, on the radio
number
show
two,
every
I want to let
you
know. The second thing I want to let you know is I've been listening to you guys all year, and I'm thoroughly just want to let you know that I didn't know anything about carpet pythons until some guy got involved. I'm a little concerned at how strange he is, and I can't believe he's letting him sit there and talk to you. But I also want to know that this has been a very pleasurable year for me, and I'm happy you guys are doing as well as you are. And I just want to call in and just wish you all a very, very Merry Christmas and a great New Year. And hopefully next year we can reconvene again when Jim from Morgantown will come in, as a stealth caller.
Yeah. There you go. I like it. If you take the phone away,
care.
I'll be sure to. You too.
But Ed.
There you go.
You know, he asked me every Tuesday who's going to be on. So that he can plot a call in.
I was going to ask him how long was Owen I forget how I would word it, but I was trying to think like how long were you incubated, Owen? What was your
probably
incubation
not long
time?
Enough. My incubation period.
What was the temperatures like? Did the temperatures go up or down or what was it?
Down
was
side
spike?
To side. Yeah.
So.
Did his mother fall down a few times? Who knows? So
cool. Cool. I was trying to throw that little Christmas vibe in the background as we talk from Jim from Morgantown.
Yeah.
Oh, so good times. I can't remember what we were talking about.
Nope.
I lost it. No, shit.
Yeah.
So, all right. I have a question.
Go on.
I don't want anybody to hate me for this. I might get hate for this. I might get hate, Owen. I might get hate.
Go on.
Okay. So, this seems to me that there's been a surgence in this quote-unquote rare reptile love, which is a good thing.
Yes.
Very cool. I like it. I really dig it. I like the fact that people are looking at other species other than, say the mainstream stuff. I think ultimately the goal should be to stop importing animals and have them from captive born and bred stock. I think that's a good thing. And the more people work with these more obscure species, they'll be in the hobby and people will be able to work with them if they want to work with them. But on the flip side of that, I almost see it seems to me like, and I could be wrong, and I'm just making an observation and a thought, but to me, I see rare reptile, and I see that it equals the reptile is cool, or, you know, somehow it's priceless, you know, it's worth a ton of money, or you can't get that species, or, you know, whatever the case may be, which is good, right? Okay, so you hear a lot from breeders, and we've preached it, and everybody seems to say the same thing. Everybody should take 2 slots in their racks or, dedicate 2 cages or whatever to rare reptiles in your room, whatever it would be, just one of those obscure species. And, you know, I agree with that. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
So then... Yeah. The rare reptile starts to become popular, right?
Uh-huh.
So that's a good thing because now you have that rare reptile, whether it's a bloodline or whether it's a species or whatever the case may be, it's now more readily available in the hobby. Let's say that rare reptile has some morphs or... Let's say that they stumble upon something. You know what I'm saying? So it becomes
more mainstream. Yeah.
Correct. So now rare reptile is mainstream. Does that mean that the rare reptile is no longer cool with the rare reptile world?
In my opinion, I think it varies because what made that reptile rare? Was it because no one could breed it in captivity? Because even that, there are... You know, if they shut down the importation from Africa, do you know how many savannah monitors would be in the country? A good amount, but do you know how many are breeding?
Not a good amount.
None, if any. Yeah, because why try to sit there and it's difficult to breed them. They haven't really figured it out yet. But why sit there and hammer out the details when babies are coming in? What's the point of it? So, and plus, you know, it's just the way it is. There's so many unproven morphs in savannah monitor, it's ridiculous because no one can get them to breed.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
you know, that's one thing where if they were to stop that, all of a sudden now a savannah monitor is a rare commodity and it becomes popular. It's already popular, but now it becomes more popular because it's rare, because it's stopped. So if that's a thing, olive python was rare just because no one had them. Then a bunch of people got them. Then they got rare because they had the albino, and now the albino's places, I imagine olive's going to drop off and just kind of be there, and then it's going to be rare just because it's not mainstream. You can't fit a bunch of them into a snake room. You can't. There's not really demand for it. That's the other thing. Some of these reptiles are just rare in the United States because there is no demand for them. You know,
right. I guess and maybe maybe I could be wrong. Maybe, you know, the more the rarer species of reptiles that I see usually tend to lend itself towards lizards and geckos and such. So maybe
exactly, which are hard to breed in captivity.
Right. So maybe what I'm saying might not be 100% true, but I guess what I – just my observation of what I see is the fact that I'm just trying to figure out what makes, like, a rare reptile – like, what classifies
What the hell makes a rare car? A limited number, hard to get, and few people have it. So that's what makes a rare reptile. Is it hard to find? Is it hard to breed? Is very few people have it? You know, I don't care if it's an all-black gecko or bright yellow. If it's difficult to find and near impossible to breed, it's rare.
So
now
let me just rewind for a second. I'm going to rewind back to, what, the 80s maybe? Wasn't that the ball
back
python?
When I wasn't alive, so I don't know.
You jerk.
See, unlike some of us who are approaching, you know,
40. Yeah, but you know what I'm saying?
Others,
like,
others here are just coming up on 30. Anyway, well, here's the thing. The ball python I don't think was ever really rare because they imported them by the truckloads.
I know, but they were rare in captivity. To have a captive.
What do you mean they were rare in captivity?
They were rare. You didn't really see it. Nobody wanted to work with them. I'm
because they were brown and black and they hid all the time and they're kind of ugly looking. You know, instead of like a sleek,
like,
sexy kind of chondro sitting on a little branch, bright red and pretty. Anyway, what were we talking about?
You also have the albino berms were just becoming popular then, and, you know,
exactly.
I don't know.
You had a lot of shit going against it. And, of course, it's the rise and fall of the market where all of a sudden people realize that you can keep a ball python happy in 32-quart tubs, and you could fill a whole room with that shit. And then also, then the morphs started coming, so then people started getting attracted to colors. I mean, if they painted every car out there black, everybody would want the one that they painted blue.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's human nature, to want what you can
exactly
have.
So you're fighting that as well. You're fighting that as well. I mean, you know, the first – I don't even know what the first morph of ball python was. But I assume the second the albinos came out, it started going.
Well, that's, I think, what it was, I think.
Yeah.
I think it was the albino.
Now, there's usually, like, the stripe, and then there's, like, something either recessive, and then usually what kicks ass is the codom. I was having this discussion, actually, with Buddy from, I don't forget what he calls himself, Stone Creek Reptiles or whatever, Hamburg, because he is convinced that the next big morph in carpet python is going to be the snow carpet python. And I actually disagree completely, because I don't believe that carpet python is going to make another jump until there's another co-dominant morph. Because markets never freak over recessives, because those hold on to value long. It takes a while for those things to get around. It's always the codominant. So it's always going to be somebody codominant, like jag or zebra or something else along those lines.
I think when we get into talking about, like, you know, codominant or recessive and does it retain value and all that kind of stuff, I think that's where we start to get into the the ball python world, to where, you know, it's kind of like where you're just really looking at the genetics of something, and something can't be cool unless it's a morph.
Exactly.
You know, so to be honest with you, I kind of hope carpets don't go that road.
That's one of the things is why I like those. That's why I like hanging out. Like, listen, I like hanging out with the carpet world. I love the morph thing. I'm so excited for my granite jags, I can't tell you. It's ridiculous. If they come.
Right.
For the love of God, they better come in a freak. I'm sorry. I digress. And I'm also excited to see what comes out of the caramel jags thing. I just want to see this morphs. And the day I hatch albinos, I'm going to be freaking out. I also want my Macs to breed. I also want the white lips to breed. I also want a bunch of stuff.
You know, and that's why I like hanging out at the Liasis page. I like hanging out with a bunch of other stuff. I love my water python. Dude, he is a dick, and I love it. He's a tiny little, like, mamba disguised as a water python. It's ridiculous, and I love it. So, and those I find hilarious, and I find them awesome. So, you know, more power to the people who want to deal with more of the rarer stuff, but I could definitely say we don't want those things to become too mainstream, because it does kind of lose some of the fun out of it, you know.
I'm not even saying, like, that I wouldn't want it to become mainstream, because I would. I want to see these species, I want to see them bred in captivity. I want to see all that stuff. But I guess what I'm trying to say in a nutshell, and I guess I'm not bringing it home, but I think, like, the argument is always that the morphs, you know, not good for, and anything that, you know, is in morphs is bad. And I just see the vibe of, like, carpet python people seem to, like, be pushing away from that, or they don't like it, or, you know, they want to work with rarer stuff. And that's cool. You work with that whatever you want. But I guess my question is, isn't that basically the same concept, though? I mean, if you want an albino zebra jag, right? Why do you want that? You want it because nobody has it, or
there's several reasons. You either want it because nobody has it, you'll be the first guy to produce it, or you're monetary. You know, I want it because I can sell it for this much, or. Then there's the other morph. That is just the morph that says something to you in your brain. You got to have it. Why? Because it's the coolest thing you've ever seen.
Right.
So, you know, yeah. There's a bunch of different reasons, and everybody's got their own reasons for doing things, and that's fine. But, you know,
isn't that the same, though, then, as your why you would want the rare reptile? You see what I mean? Like, I guess to me, I see the similarities, and I think the two worlds don't see the similarities. Like, I see that, you know, there's multiple reasons of why you would want to work with this, or why you would want to work with that. I guess at the end of the day, what I'm going to tell people is that a cool snake is a cool snake. Don't knock it because it's this, or knock it because it's that. You know, I mean, if it's cool and you dig it, then work with it, man. And hopefully, you know, if it's something that's rare, power to you, brother. You know, get it done.
Yeah.
You know, get them out there. Get them in people's hands. Educate people. You know, get it going. I'm all with you with it, you know. But I just don't – I don't know.
Yeah.
I just don't
see it. I mean, and you're completely correct. I mean, you know, I don't like retics. You know, I don't like dealing with the size. I don't like dealing with a lot of stuff. So I don't work with retics. That probably never will. And that's just my preference.
Right.
But you know what? If retics are your thing, knock yourself out.
Yeah. I don't know. I just was trying to – just trying to understand the idea of what
well,
– you know, other than
what I,
other than, go ahead.
Well, I mean, what I don't like is that people are all – a lot of people who are into the rare or – straight locality or pure stock are knocking everything that is, you know, producing the morphs and things like that. And there are other legitimate reasons for producing the morph or breeding morphs other than I got to sell them for this much. You know, like I said, maybe you just really dig that morph, or, you know, maybe this is a project you've been working on for years. I mean, I'm splitting out the high cons this year. We're going to the second gen, and hopefully we'll start seeing even more yellow and black in these things.
Right.
Just keep going, keep going, keep going. And that's my own line, and I'm very proud of that. And that's my own deal. And, you know, I'm not about to let those drop. But, you know, it's so that's another reason. So, you know, don't sit there and be like, oh, I don't believe in morphs, or morphs are terrible for the market. You know, bad people who do bad business practices and do bad animal stuff are bad for the market.
Yes.
Not the morphs, not the pure, not the localities. They all have their own little niche and stuff.
I mean, I totally get, believe me, I totally understand why the whole push towards getting people to pay attention to something other than, you know, simply a morph. Because a lot of people that come into the hobby, they don't know anything else. And I, you know,
right.
I praise the people that are going out there and they're educating people about different species and how to keep them and how to be successful with them. And, you know, if you're into a species, there's somebody out there probably that works with them. Find that person. Talk to them. Figure out, you know, that's, you know, to me, that's kind of what I've always preached is that I think
right.
that if you're into something, just be into it because you were into it. Don't be into it because it's rare or if it's a morph or, you know, like Kalmahera scrubs. You know, I use this example mm-hmm. all the time. Most
yeah.
people probably don't give a shit, you know, or maybe they do. I don't know, but I don't
no,
care.
I think there's some people that do and there's some people that do and there's some people that don't. And that's just
right.
the way it happens, you know.
Sure. I'm not, but see,
yeah,
I guess
no one gives
what I'm
a
saying at the
I have
end
a water python.
I don't
I have
care.
A water python, and I bought it, and I love it. I brought him over to the table. And my buddy Andrew's like, why do you have a brown snake? That's stupid as shit. Yet I put him down on the table, and within 5-10 minutes, three people offered to buy him from me.
Yeah. I mean,
and I'm like,
you
get
know,
the hell out of here.
We mostly focus on snakes in the reptile world, but, you know, I mean – there's so many cool species of snakes out there. There's not just even just Morelia. I mean, there's so many. You know, I was talking to our buddy Jeff from Corralis Radio. I've been listening
yeah.
to their shows, and I, you know, I really dig.
He's a dangerous bastard because you and I are both like, you know what's cool? Amazon.
Yeah.
Those are nice. I'm like, we're doomed now. Like, that's going to happen at some point because I'm going to end up getting 1.1 goddamn Amazons.
Yeah, I don't understand why. Like, there you go. There's a perfect example. I don't understand why.
I would have never bit on those things until I had to talk with some people about them.
Yeah.
Which is what's cool. Yeah.
And it's great that those guys are going and they've created a radio show and they're getting the word out about it and they're, you know, they're getting guests on there that probably me and you, Owen, or the people that aren't in the Corralis world never would have known even exist. Because a lot of these guys
are
under the radar, and they do what they do because they love what they do, and that's a cool thing. So, you know, I don't know, just a little thought of the whole rare reptile, what does that really mean, I guess, you know. And I'm not bashing it. I'm not bashing it, but sometimes I just don't get it, you know. But, hey, whatever. I just don't understand, like, you know, some crazy looking skink that it looks like a pile of leaves or something. I see like somebody post up a, you know, a beautiful green tree python or something, and they're like, oh, that's no good. But
that's not rare. Food him. Yeah, it's like, you know, you're right. It's just the weird thing. I mean, by the way, apparently the first albino ball python morph was the first morph proven by Bob Clark. Thank you to our embedded reporter, Bill, who apparently, as we're speaking, goes and finds shit for us and posts it on Morelia Python Radio. This way we have something to read. So, yeah, Bill's doing that. We don't have to now because, you know, apparently we have, like, you know, Bill doing it. It's great. I love it. Keep going. Keep doing it.
Sir.
Good, because now I don't have to Google anything while we're talking.
Oh, man.
Can we vote Owen's dad as best NPR troll of the year? Damn it, Dave Tilly.
Oh, man.
Exclamation point. All right.
I guess the other thing that I was thinking of as I was talking about this was there was a post on the Jungle Carpet group page, the U.S., that was Andrew Parris's group that he started.
Yeah.
And the
yeah,
question was,
yeah.
I don't know if you caught this or not, but the question was, would you like to see more morphs of jungle carpets?
You got two.
Right. Would you like to see more?
No.
No?
You know, I don't think you really need to. What else are you going to get? I mean, because you got to think about it this way. Pure jungle morphs, you only have zebra and, technically you have three, if you want to think about it. you have Zebra, Super Zebra, and Panther. So those are your morphs. And then you have the lines, which are, you know, Ivory and all the pretty yellow things. That's that. That's for jungle. You know, I wouldn't go too far. I mean, Coastal, I think, is the one that's got the most, correct? They've got Jag, Exanic.
No, I'm not asking if there is. I'm just asking, do we need more?
Do you? Well, I don't. That's the thing is, I don't, like, what would show up in a jungle that would be completely different from something that has already shown up in another strain of carpet python? Like, if Exanic shows up in jungle, is it really going to be different from an Exanic coastal? What are we looking at here? What do jungle breeders want more than an all-yellow snake, an all-black snake, and crazy lightning bolt pattern snake?
Well, here's my thoughts on it. I posted this up over there. But, you know, I guess, like we just said in the previous discussion, I get the whole more focused obsession and the idea that, you know, there's more to snakes than a morph. I get it. You know, they're what they do, just their whole, you know, you get a snake that you can watch and observe and watch what they do, and they bask for a certain amount of time, you know, just overall, just what's going on with them, and I think that's a cool thing. But what if there was a morph? Like, I think of, like, morphs, you know, again, I'm going to the ball python world, but let's just say that there was a jungle morph, right? And it was a jungle carpet morph, and it just intensified the yellow on a carpet python.
We already have that, though.
Well, what do you mean? Yeah. Well, I'm talking about consistently to where you would get it. Like right now, you're doing line bred stuff, so you're not going to get the whole clutch to be like that.
So what you're saying is there's this morph that will mud jungles you could find to make pretty ones.
Well, yeah. If you breed, it's think of it like a passport or something similar to that, a fire or something that, you know, when you breed it, it remember the desert in the ball python.
Yeah.
You know? Okay. What if it cleaned it up? What if it made the black blacker? What if it made a solid yellow stripe with black stripes down the back?
Thank you. Okay.
What if there was a morph that was solid yellow except for black dots down the back?
All right. A Dalmatian kind of a bullshit. All right. So.
Whatever.
All right. Whatever. What, you want another one? So it's.
I'm not saying I want another one, but I'm calling BS to the people that said that they wouldn't want that.
You can always sit there and say, yeah, well, maybe, and then something appears. I mean, remember, think about it this way. Jungle didn't have anything until Zebra. I mean, all they had was the line breeding and the possible yellows and then the Jags. And then Zebra hit, and that's when everything went to the races. So you cannot sit there and say that if Jungle were to come out with a brand new morph. Now, another way to put it, how long did it take for everybody to know about the Panther? I think it took like 24, 48 hours for everybody to freaking know that this thing existed.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's just from word of mouth and reposting. So, you know, you can't sit there and say that if something were to not, you know, come out, like if something were to show up, you'd damn it, Bill, I'm focused. Stop reading shit. it's one of those things where, you know, if something were to come out, you can't say that, you know, I would never want it. I don't want it. Who knows? You don't know.
Yeah, but
I mean,
I sat there
and told you I would never own scrubs, and the fuck is that over there? So,
well, not even that. That's not even what I'm getting. I guess what I'm getting at is that you see people and they say that they want, in the same breath, they're saying that they wouldn't want to see no more morphs, and that's fine. That's their opinion, man. That's cool. I'm not knocking their opinion, but I guess my problem with it is that you see a lot of people say that they want what Mother Nature intended, But I call BS.
Then,
and I'll tell you why.
Then breed that
BS.
If that's what you want. Well, listen, if you wonder what Mother Nature intended, you should have brown, ugly jungles.
Yes. Thank you.
Mother Nature intended, your goddamn snakes should be able to hide in a pile of sticks.
Yes.
God damn it.
Exactly. That's my
point. Now I'm pissed. So I'm going to break something.
I guess that's what I'm trying to get at is that when you're saying that, but yet isn't I don't want to say it's a morph because it's probably going to confuse people, but isn't it? Wouldn't if you consider a tiger a line bred trait? If you consider red coastals a line bred trait, because
right. It's
selectively bred, you know, or you know the striping or you know
well
tiger
even wild. Wild variation happens. I mean, it happens to other species. We saw that in pictures of carpet pythons in Australia. You can have some really pretty ones. That's just the way it is. But
then
you can also have line breeding in the wild. I mean, morphs and colors and stuff happen naturally. Those animals are normally killed because they cannot hide. You know, but then that's why you get some other ones, like, you know, the albino monitors happen in the wild all the time because monitors in the wild are always fucking dirty. So it's just a brown animal anyway, so it blends in perfect. You know, yellow crocodiles, because they're able to live, get huge, and just stay that big. It happens. So you can theoretically have a population that is brighter yellow because that's where all these brighter yellow animals have been able to survive. It's evolution at, like, its basic, you know, kind of thing, the pepper moth kind of a deal.
Yeah.
There was this, for those of you who don't know, it's a pepper moth. There was this moth up in England where there was a brown type and a white type. And at one point, all the brown ones couldn't blend against white birch trees, so they were all getting eaten. And then they opened up a whole bunch of factories, and all the birch trees started turning more brownish, and all the brown ones were able to live, and all the white ones died. So that's where you get to do it. That's the ones that get to breed. If you live, you breed. So that's the way it goes. You know, to say that it's a line-bred trait and that we did it is, you're partially correct because we took out a lot of the, you know, they don't have to worry about getting eaten. They don't have to worry about finding a mate. We're pretty much playing matchmaker. So, yeah, we did it all, but it could have occurred naturally. But, yeah.
I mean, I guess it's in theory, I guess you could go to Australia and find the, you know, find jungle carpets that are nice yellow. But to me, I don't think you're going to find what you would find in what we're working with in the
oh, hell no. Oh, hell no.
States, or even what they're working with in Australia. You know,
but that's where it started. That's how it started. You found a reddish looking coastal and another reddish looking coastal, and you bred them the frick together and got reddish babies.
Yeah,
same thing happened with the jungles. You found the prettiest yellow and the prettiest yellow and started combining.
I guess with me, at least I try to be consistent. Me personally, and that's just my two cents, is that I dig all carpets. I would kill. Well, maybe not kill somebody literally, but
it's too late you said it.
for like a wild caught carpet python. Oh my God, that would be the coolest thing ever. You know what I mean?
All scars and mites and ticks. Yeah, give me that. Yeah.
You know, just because, you know, even like I think of Erie and Jaya's. Obviously, we can't get anything from Australia, but Erie and Jaya's. Like, I think of, like, you know, just to have, you know, some more diverse blood in my IJ collection, or just to have something maybe a little bit different. Maybe something that's a little closer to nature, you know, or maybe to say like, hey, man, this is what a carpet python looks like in the wild. But I have those in my collection. Now, other people would probably come along and say, ah, man, that's ugly. But to me, it's
See,
cool,
I would like
know?
I would like the wild, or I would like to have an IJ that was, you know, not related to my IJs, just so I can kind of improve the granite. I know the big thing about the granite is people want it outcrossed. Because it has those issues. So I would love to have that.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's just something that, you know, and some people, like I said, some people, they don't want to see any more morphs. They just like what their yellow and black snake. And, hey, man, that's cool.
And, like, here's the thing. When you go to a snake show, there's no one with a gun to your head saying that you need to buy a zebra because you're now a jungle breeder and that he will murder you if you don't buy a zebra, raise it to the appropriate age, and then breed it. That person does not exist. So it's okay for you to not buy the morphs and just breed whoever you want. And then it's also okay that you, you know, though again, this same person does not exist and say that you need to type out on your computer constantly that you are this wonderful person who breeds nothing but pure jungle and that you hate everybody that does morphs and doesn't see why they should be in the hobby and that it has irreparably damaged the carpet python community. No one's forcing you to say these things. Shut the hell up. So that's my theory.
Right. Right.
You're welcome.
There you go. So, yeah, that's one thing that I saw. Another thing that this is another one of those what-if questions. There was a paper that was recently – these what-if questions kind of get you fired up, Owen. I kind of like it. I'm not the fired up one. I just kind of throw it out there and walk away. Like,
yeah, what the hell? You're doing my job today.
So there was a paper that was released just recently. I want to say, I don't know if it was released the other day, but it was by, let me see if I can pull up the name real quick. It looks like it's Graham Reynolds, Matthew Niemiller, and Liam Ravel. Basically, they... took boas and pythons, and they looked at them on a molecular level, and they kind of changed some things around. One of the big things was they took your white lips and they added them to the ring pythons. So
now,
and you were saying before
lips,
the show, yeah. What do you think of that?
That makes sense. That makes sense. In my opinion, white lips and ring. Well, they act the same. They look the same. The same kind of requirements from the same kind of area. It makes sense to me. You know, I wish I got they would change the Latin for the ring python because it still ends in boa. But, you know, it's like, really? We're going to do all this, but we're not going to change it to, like, just python? So, yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, hey, that makes a lot of sense to me. And I always had some inkling that they were kind of more closely related than people gave credit to. So,
I guess until I talked to you earlier, I would have thought that they were more, to me, when I look at a ring python, they remind me of like a Woma type of python.
See, but they remind, you know what they remind me more of? They remind me of a goddamn Brazilian rainbow boa with the way that they're built. Well, they always reminded me of Brazilian rainbow boa, but you know, and I think you're right with the Woma, but they kind of have too long of a snout. If you ask me, but of course I've not, I was kind of looking at the other types of white lip that are out there, the others, I think the three other ones. And some of them have weird kind of head shapes that kind of remind me of the rings. So it's cool because, you know, remember, we're only really exposed in the United States to the two types, the gold and the black, the Albertese and the Horsei. So,
right.
You know, there's you're missing the Bennett's and a few others. So, when I was talking to you, I said the one has like almost like a shark kind of a head. It's really pointed more like an arrow. So, that's cool. But, you know, I always thought that the rings belonged really closely with the white lips. Now, I don't like them that they moved the white lips over to the rings. I think you should just take in the rings and, you know, tuck them in there with the white lips. But now everything's, what is it, Batarvis? I can't even pronounce that shit. Sure just kept
what is
Leo
it?
Python. I can't.
Oh, where they moved it to? It's Bothrochilus, maybe? Bothrochilus?
Something. Who knows? There's probably some other person who's way better at the Latin who's screaming at his speakers right now because we sound like idiots.
Yeah.
Hi, Nick.
I try to shy away from that because I'm afraid I'm going to sound like a total tool because I'm bad at that. But,
For the first couple years, I was into carpet pythons. I kept calling them Morelia or Morella. I butchered it.
Morelli.
Morelli. Yeah, it was terrible. And yeah.
That's
so.
They did move, which I thought this was done before. I heard of this before, but Timor pythons and reticulated pythons to its own genus.
The Timors always remind me of goddamn, like, Lyasis, like Max. So I'm surprised the Timors got moved where they got moved. So
now, see, I can see that, but I don't know.
Yeah.
So be it. I never
whatever.
And then what was the other one?
The animals we're allowed to cover just slimmed down real quick.
Apodura.
You know?
I hope I said that one right. That's the New Guinea olive python, if you would say.
Casper will be screaming if we didn't.
Yeah, they moved that to Lyasis.
They moved that to Lyasis apodura.
Just when you thought your Lyasis collection was complete. Wrong!
Damn
sir.
It, you're right! Oh, no! Shit! Oh, man,
You.
Oh.
Your plan
all
is
I needed
foodle,
was freaking.
Sir.
Damn it, all I needed was another water and some Savu, and now I gotta get Apodora. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I wasn't getting Dunn's pythons. That wasn't gonna happen. So,
I think the big thing though is they move scrubs, Bolin.
Yes,
Bolin Tellies.
We lost scrubs.
Similaia.
How did this happen?
Similaia.
I
yeah.
was Malaya python. Yeah, because it's got the scrubs, the Bolins, and then you said the Owen Telly, right?
Yes.
We lost a lot.
I'm kind of confused with the Owen Pelly because I thought that was related sister species to the carpet python, the Morelia.
So like, you thought it was more on the long lines of like a Brettle, where it was not a carpet but really really close. Which I agree. I thought this one was too. So
I thought it was
the fact that they kind of spun it out there is ridiculous. So
yeah. I thought it was that.
Also,
between, like, say, King Horneye and Morelia spilota.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, the one thing I got confused by was that, you know, I wasn't sure of how much research has been done on the Owen Pellies. I mean, I thought they only, like, started collecting them this year. Are you telling me, like, one of the first ones they collected, they jabbed with a bunch of needles to get DNA off of them and quick ran this test, which... You know, more power to them if they did. That's awesome that they worked that quickly. But you know, I wasn't expecting any of this. I mean, I don't know that I would figure you would need more research in the scrub complex anyway to even make the decisions. Because you know, we're still gramping. We're still putting all amethystina together, the Barnex all the way up to a bunch of other stuff. It's you know, it's one of those things where. You did all this and you couldn't, you know, try to figure out some other things.
Yeah, I get, you know, again, it's all taxonomy. I mean, that's one of those things that people can argue all day long and, you know, it's this, it's that, and there are theories behind it. And if there's scientific evidence, then, you know, there's scientific evidence. So,
and, you know, that's the thing is that the taxonomy for animals is always changing. It always is. I mean,
yeah.
At one point, skunks were labeled in the weasel family, and now they got their own family. That's just the way it rides, is that new evidence is found, your DNA samples are done, and the things change. If you were to grab a science textbook about taxonomy from, like, high school, it's wrong. It's completely wrong by now.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I guess this leads to me to my what-if statement.
We can't have scrub shows anymore.
No, we're still gonna have scrub shows, whether it's Morelia or semolina or whatever the hell it is.
But,
you
call it?
Yeah, to me it doesn't make a difference. I dig scrubs because they're cool, but kind of screws up my whole EB Morelia thing going. But oh well. And real quick, I don't understand. I mean, they move them out. You know, Morelia I can see is kind of a complex that maybe should be broken up. To me, I see Bolins and Scrubs, and then there was the Carpets or Spilota and the Owen Pellies, and then there's the Rough Scales, and then there's Chondros. And which you want to talk about taxonomy? Chondros are not even really chondropython anymore. But who knows? Maybe they'll be broke out back into chondropython, and they'll put Morelia carinata into that, and it'll be chondropython carinata.
So, who the hell knows?
But here's where I'm going to blow your mind. What if they decided that they come out and they put out a paper and they just said all carpets were the same, except for Brett? Boom!
Let me put it to you.
All the same.
What if they came out and said that all the localities are actually separate species?
What if they said they were separate species? Well, yeah, you could go that way too.
Because then no longer are you an integrator, my friend. You're a hybridizer.
And yeah, I know.
Bad. So,
I love how there's that line.
There's that line that we don't ever cross. And now you're on that side of the line. I mean, I did not go to Daniel Natusha's talk at ICAST, but from what you told me, people were about ready to skin that man alive.
I don't know. It's just kind of that thing, like, I don't know. You know, it's like, hold on.
Oh, no. I think I know what's happening.
No. I just see, like, I don't know. I don't base what I keep based on what somebody says is this or that or whatever. I just keep what I think is cool. It just so happened that what I thought was cool was Morelia. And it was all one.
Yeah, the problem is that it's kind of hard to, inform the public what the hell it is if it changes every couple of years. So
there you go. Leave it to my man, Dave Kelly. You know, usually I let him read these papers, and then he gives me, like, the Cliff Note version of them.
Yeah. Dave Kelly is, like, the Cliff Note version of everything.
That's right. He like, reads these papers and then gives us the highlights of what it is. But he's telling me that Rawlins moved Timmers and Retics together. But they used now I remember, but they used Hoser's name. Oh, Hoser.
You and I discussed him before the show started.
Yeah, so. I'm going to butcher this name, Brog Hammeros, or I can't even say it. But
yeah, it sounds familiar.
Yeah, now they moved them to a non-Hoser name called Maleo Python. So.
Mayo Python? Oh, weird.
Not mayo, like mayonnaise.
Not mayonnaise. Oh, sorry. Right out of there. Maleo.
Oh, man. We had a caller, but I lost him.
Oh, damn it. Sorry.
I was trying
Call
to
back.
Get, but it was in between. So, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of a weird thing. You know, I was kind of thinking, like, I don't know. Would carpets kind of be – I mean, I could see them maybe separating out diamond pythons. As a subspecies,
yeah.
You know, I could see that.
It's into its own separate species, yeah. I could see that happening.
Not even species, just subspecies, because remember, they interbreed in the wild.
True.
Dave should call in and give a synopsis. Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that 100%. You know, give us the cliff.
Dave
version.
Should call in and give us a synopsis.
He should.
Dave, you have 5 seconds.
Now's your time to
Four,
show off, man.
Three. Two.
Nope, you didn't call in. Just so I'll throw it out.
Ah, you failed me again.
347-157-3359. There you go. Call in. What's up? We got the caller back. Hold on. Let's see who it is.
Uh-oh, hold on.
They're a 215 area code. Hello, 215 area code. You got a question or comment?
Oh, it's Buddy, Owen.
Hi, Buddy. How you doing?
What's up, Owen? Owen, no. What I was saying was, if you want to go back to this, is I think the snow is going to change a lot of things with Morelia, with the carpets.
I don't think so, because snow is going to be just another – you can't go too far with snow. You can only do the things that are already out here, snow, jag, snow zebra, snow zebra jag, snow this, snow that, and then eventually you're going to run out of morphs. You're going to need something new that can be added on top of all the existing things. That's where another codom would come in. Say that Dalmatian thing we were talking about is another codom. Now that codom can be added to everything that's out there. So, yeah, I think that a new codom would be what would do more for Morelia and more for a carpet python than a double recessive like snow.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, but it goes back to the one show, I forget who brought it up, but they said they don't pay attention until they start seeing the high-end animals. And I think, you know, when you put a snow, I mean, you won't see a snow at a Hamburg show anytime soon, but, you know, it's like nobody pays attention until they see that $10,000 animal, you know, $5,000 animal on the table. That's what I mean. Along the lines of just bringing more attention, you know, because it's still one of those things where, you know, as amazing as Morelia are, as carpet pythons are, there's still, you know, seems to be, in my mind, a lack of respect in some ways as far as, like, just the whole, everything as a whole.
You mean as far as people appreciating them? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, appreciating them. Yeah, because, I mean, it was just like the last Hamburg show. I mean, you know, there was you and Jason. That was, you know, that was the first time I, you know, Mo wasn't there and Howard wasn't there. You know, and it's like, aside from you guys, the only carpets that were there were those guys in the corner who had the quote-unquote rescues or whatever.
The problem is that you're basing yourself off of a show that, in my opinion, has been lacking in the last couple months when it comes to the people who are coming to the show and what they are after. A lot of reptile shows, especially the ones that I've gone to, have been, how can I get the most animals for the cheapest amount of money so I can turn around and resell them on Craigslist?
Right.
And that is not really what I'm going for with carpet pythons. So to my basis would be what goes on at the other shows like Tinley Park and things like that.
Yeah.
So
I mean, to me, they're the real reptile shows. I mean, Hamburg's good. I mean, but for me, the only reason I go to Hamburg now is to pick up supplies, like pick up rats, pick up food from my, you know, pick up food. And if I'm picking up an animal from you or from Mo, February, I'm picking one up from Mo and from Jason. I'm getting, you know, so, you know, that's just it. But when you talk about the Tinleys and even Daytonas, you know,
I'm curious, not to cut you off. I'm curious why do you think that why are you now just buying supplies from the show? Like, what is it about the show that kind of turned you off?
Because they're all ball pythons.
Okay.
I go to Hamburg for supplies. I go to Oates to hang out with Owen, and I want to start going to White Plains. But see, I want to go to White Plains because, as from what I understand, there's Mike Curtin, there's Owen. You know, there's more.
I don't do White Plains.
I heard you did it one time, or you were there.
Yeah, there's too many carpet people at White Plains, also like late New York. So.
Right. Well, it's just like Hamburg is just that for suppliers. My rats are up there. I do lychees, so I could talk to the guy from Leaping Lychees. You know, and that's just it. I mean, if I want carpets, like Owen is starting to get me into the whole caramel thing. I don't have to go to Hamburg. I can just take a fly over to his house if I'm going to pick up an animal. You know, I got my jungle jag and the diamond carpet spark from Mo, and I picked them up at Hamburg. You know, but I mean, right now it's like every row has at least four or five ball python breeders. It's ridiculous. You know, it's ridiculous that, you know, I don't even know how they survive anymore. I really don't. you know.
They decide which tables do the most amount of money and which one gets the most amount of people coming through the door. That's why the dealers normally have 2 to 4 tables, because they can pay for that much money, because they're the ones who are getting it. Because, like I said, people are coming. They're buying baby iguanas for about $50, $60 bucks for, like, a box of 4. And then they're turning around, and they're going to be on Craigslist. The next Hamburg show, see what's out there. Go on Craigslist the next day. You will see everything you saw, but for, like, $20. Because that's what a lot of the shows are nowadays. You have a few passionate people, and you have a bunch of people looking to score cheap animals. So that's the way it goes. And it's actually some of the reasons I've been discussing with a few people about Rogue's future with the shows, whether or not we'll do them.
So. Yeah, I mean, I could see that, because I don't, you know, it's just one of those things. I mean, the last show, if it wasn't for the conversations I was having with you, I probably would have cut out about an hour earlier. You know, it's just like, it's just one of those things. You go up, you get what you need, and then you're gone. I mean, because it's the same thing over and over and over again. It's just, there's no appreciation for anything else except ball pythons, you know. And if somebody sees you walking around with a carpet, I mean, when I picked up the my jungle jack from Mo, you know, I had one of the ball python guys go, you know, basically you're wasting your money with that. That market is dead. That market's not going anywhere. And I just looked at them and laughed, you know. I mean, that's their feeling, you know. Like, the only thing that's ever going to sell is a ball python. And that's kind of what brought up the conversation that I had with you, is I felt like if a snow came into, you know, to the picture, it would change a lot of minds, because there's more than just the – you know, the jungle colors and the jungle jag colors. Now it's an all-white snake, which to me, I mean, I've seen the one on Precision Reptiles. It's amazing looking.
Here's the thing. If you want that big of a pop, there are already white carpet pythons out there, according to people. They see albinos. That's an albino. Now they're going to see a snow. From a distance, it's going to look like an albino. So what I'm telling you is that you're not going to really whip the reptile community into a frenzy over a white snake, especially something that they think might actually already be out there. So what really kicked up carpet python was the inclusion of the jag, which was the yellow snake. That popped, and then you get the jungle jags, and those you can see from across a room. So that's the way it goes. It's something bright, something pretty, something new. So a snow carpet python, in my opinion, is not going to be the cornerstone of a brand new incursion into carpet python. You're going to need something else, something that pops. I'm thinking what's going to be the one to get everything whipped up is going to be in a couple years when you start seeing gamma line super zebra. When you start getting that neon yellow all over one snake, that's when it's going to start getting kicked up into something nice. Even then, you're not going to, carpet python is never going to be one of those things where everybody drops what they got to run over and buy, sell out my entire table. That's never going to happen.
Yeah,
so,
I forget what show it was, but it was the statement was the price tag. So, I mean, if you see a snow out there. I mean,
the price tag is a double-edged sword. You see a snow carpet out there, and it's got 10, 12 grand written on it. People are like, holy crap, and they turn immediately away. They're not going to go, holy crap, I should get into this because I can make a ton of money. Then you've got people jumping into it.
There are some that do. I mean, because there are some ball python people that are only into it for the money.
Every reptile industry, every single species that is only in it for the money. I'm saying that just because you got I have $800 snakes on the table, and people at shows are looking at me like I'm goddamn crazy. So now you're telling me if I were to put a 10 grand snake on the table, that's going to improve sales. I'm telling you that's going to have the exact opposite result that you think is going to happen. You're going to have more people turn their heads and go, you know what, hell no, and walk away. You got to go to the right, you got to get your right audience. Most of those high-dollar sales
are not really done off a whim at a snake show. It's researched and picked and primed. And you might get someone who sees something really interesting for a really high dollar amount and settles for a cheaper carpet python just because it has attracted him to the species. But
it's not going to be
the next step.
That's what I was kind of getting at. It's like, okay, you see the snow, and then you start paying attention, and the next thing you notice the super caramels, the caramel zebra jag, you know, all those things.
I don't, and here's my opinion, is that I don't think the snow is going to be what brings everybody here. I think it's going to be something cooler. Like I said, the line-bred gamut super zebras. I think it's going to be the line-bred ghosts. I think it's going to be something that looks completely different from another morph that's out there in another species of snake. There are already snow boas. There's already snow this, snow that. You want something else that will pop, that will set carpet python aside from something else out there. So that's only my opinion.
No, I mean, you know, I don't know. I've seen that animal, and I remember back to what the snow did for the boa. You know, it was, you know, it kind of changed everything. You know what I mean? Because it opened up for, you know, the snows and the sun glows and all that other stuff.
Yeah. You can achieve the same kind of draw that you're saying, that you're talking about, with
right.
an adult carpet python.
Yeah, you can. The times we've talked at your table, I mean, yeah, I've seen people come up and ask questions, you know, and you're right. But, you know, it's just when you look at the people, like we just said, the people who are in it for the money, the people who walk into that show and all they want to do is, you know, I think, yeah, the super caramels, which I think are amazing animals, they're okay, but it's like, they're looking for that higher dollar amount, you know, like it's a...
Super caramels are okay. All right, you're getting disconnected. I'm out with you.
You know, I love
enough
the
out of you.
Caramels.
Eric, chop them. Get him the hell off of here. The second he said that to myself, no, get him the hell out of here. Jesus Christ, said the wrong thing.
No, but you know what I mean. I'm getting bit by one of your lesser tigers every time I open
good,
up this container.
Good. That's what you get.
But what I'm saying is that there are people out there who the $800 animal is okay, but they want that $5,000 and $6,000 animal.
Well,
you know,
they're stupid because the second you buy into a morph, you have a $75 depreciation by the time you actually get to making it. So unless you – yeah. So that's the way it goes. The second you buy into it, you buy babies, by the time you're producing, it's 75% gone from what you bought it at. You're going to make your money back with the first clutch, but still, you're not selling the animals for $12,000 when you produce them. That ain't going to happen. So
if you want to sell the babies
for $12,000, you're going to have to buy into it when it's into the 30s. So,
let me put this out to you because I am making, well, hopefully I will make double het for snows this year. And I would never take them to Hamburg to sell because probably nobody would buy them. The price that I would put at them, they would look at it and say, what the hell? But I think I can appreciate where you're coming from. You're just saying that if somebody saw a snow carpet, maybe at a Hamburg type show, that it might draw their attention to carpets. And you know,
an adult snow though.
Think a visual albino would change people's mind? You know, like bring more attention.
Did it?
Like even a visual albino.
Well, the thing is that an albino, with the albino, it comes with the stigma of the second an albino shows up in an animal, in a species, that's when people start paying attention to it. Because of the past, because that's when people started paying attention to Verm. That's when people started paying attention to Ball. So they wait, some people almost wait for the albino to show up before they start looking at the species. So having the next step being something else. Now you're comparing the morphs that are out there of which one will be the bigger draw. And that's just a matter of opinion. And, you know, we don't even know. Because for all we know, nobody's going to pay any attention until all of a sudden the Panthers are showed up here.
See, here's the thing. And I probably, I don't know if this is a true statement or not, but I'm pretty much invested in almost every carpet python morph available. And I would be probably the one in this area. I can't think. Who else would be that way, Owen? Anybody?
Not really.
I would never.
No, you got years on
me. I would never sell any of the snakes that I would have for sale at Hamburg because people wouldn't pay what I would want them to pay.
And they wouldn't appreciate them.
What was the price we put on that Darwin that you had me bring? Was that like $8,000 or something like that? Was it $1,200? No,
it was $1,200.
Sorry, it was like $1,200. So that was $1,200 Darwin, and like people were looking at it like they didn't give a crap. They saw the price tag and they immediately skipped right over top of it. So, you know, selling an animal at a Hamburg show is not, you know, either you're going to be drawn to carpet python or you're not. Whether it's a white snake or a blue snake or an orange snake, that's your own personal preference. So having one morph saying that it's going to be the next jump is not I don't think you can do that.
This is where I kind of would take the side of the non-morph people. I know, you heard it. Yes, you did. You know, when we start talking about morph and if it's going to make a jump, to me, I don't know, man. It's kind of like, is that the only thing that's cool about carpet pythons? I don't think so. I mean, to me, they're cool because they're a moderately sized python. They're easy to take care of. They're very active, so you can observe them. That, you know, they like to be out in the open. And just in the natural variation of carpet pythons, you pretty much have any color that you could pick from. There's red. There's yellow. There's brown. There's black. You know, I mean, you can pretty much find whatever you're looking for. If you want striped, if you want banded, I mean, I dig the morphs. I love the morphs. I think they're cool, but I think they're cool because I love carpet pythons and it's just like another paint job on the snake that I love. To get into the, it's not going to be cool until there's a snow. You know, to be honest, I don't think I want those people in carpet python world. I don't want to sound like an elitist or anything, because to me, you're not in it because you like carpet python. Now, don't get me wrong. You know, I would be a hypocrite if I were to say that the first time I saw a jag, I was like, what the hell is that? You know, but the more I delved into it, so I think your point is right to a certain extent, but to me, when we're focusing on, we're just kind of talking about this morph or that morph, or it kind of loses to me what kind of makes carpet pythons and Morelia cool. And the thing that people don't like about ball pythons, they're bringing to the table with the species that they do like, if that makes sense. So, like, everybody talks about ball pythons are bad because everybody's in it for the money, or there's all these morphs and that's all they care about, and blah, 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 which I would agree and disagree. I mean, there are people out there that they could care less about the ball python as a species, and there's other people that really dig them, but they just so happen to like clowns, you know, and they think it's a cool morph, so they work with them. So they're just as passionate about, you know, they're clown as I am about a carpet, but, you know, that doesn't make them bad guys because they're into that. But if that's all you're talking about is, well, what can I breed this clown to make something that's this and combo that? And, you know, I don't know. That's kind of what attracted me to the carpet python world. So it's like, I do like to dabble in that because I like genetics. I like the different paint jobs. I like the idea of, like, when you cut open an egg, you're gonna find something new. You know, I dig all that, and that's cool. But at the end of the day, carpet pythons are just cool because they're carpet pythons, not because there's a snow or caramel.
And I agree with you 100%. And with me, I kind of live on that middle. I mean, I dig the natural stuff. Like, ever since I got started talking to Mo and I started talking to Owen, and I rekindled my love for carpets from my green trees. I mean, my main love was green trees. And then I love carpets from afar, but then I started talking to Owen and I started talking to Mo, and now I'm in and I'm working with both of them. I mean, and I'm looking at everything. Like, I wanted, I'm waiting on your Poison Ivy project, because I love those earring jars. I love that color on that earring jar. You know, my look at it, you know, the way I look at it is that I think if you get that one big, like, eye-opening animal, it's just going to open up everything else, because somebody's going to go over there, look at the snow, or even, you know, a super something, and then all of a sudden they're going to look and see an earring jar, and all of a sudden now they're in love with earring jars.
They could do
the
same thing with a really nicely line bred brettle. I mean, it could be the same damn thing. So
And I love brettles too, but it's one of those things that when you look at, you know, something like a snow or a high contrast albino, it's, to me, I hate saying it, but it's more appealing to the eye with certain people who don't understand the species the way you do, Owen, or the way Eric does. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I know what you're saying, but I guess you know the thing about that is that's kind of sad that,
If you look at shows like Hamburg, I mean, it just goes to show you how sad, you know, a majority of the reptile community is.
Well, you know, this is why I say all the time, is like, you know, here you have an opportunity to where you can vote with your dollar, you know, I mean,
yeah.
And there's a perfect example. If you don't like what's going on there, then don't go, you know, don't support them. And, you know, if you're looking for a rodent breeder, I can put you in touch with somebody that's local.
Oh, no,
so
I got a great rodent breeder. You know, I pick up at Hamburg because it gives me a chance just to get around, you know, some of the people that I like. Like, I enjoy talking to Mo and to Jason and to Howard and to Owen. So that's
sure.
Like my chance that I can talk to all them all at once. You know, so and it's just it,
or you
it's,
could go
it's
to
a little
carpet.
Yeah, no, I'm going.
Maybe.
I'm going. Okay.
Little
I guess Owen's going to keep me from this.
Yeah.
But, no, I mean, I wanted, you know, I came to ICAST because, you know, that's where I like, you know, that's where I wanted to be, you know.
Right.
And it is. But I just think when I had that conversation, it was, I think that that's going to be the one thing that opens up the door, because I think once the door is open, I think, you know, there's going to be a lot more interest in the species, and you're going to, you know, I think once, it's like a trickle-down effect. Yeah, you'll start up here with, forget the snow. Go to, like, maybe if someone comes out with a high-contrast albino, it's just going to trickle down. And somebody's going to catch on with, you know, the tigers and fall in love with the tigers. And maybe they won't go for a high-contrast albino, but they'll pick up the tiger.
What you don't think, but these things are happening already. It's already happening. You're hunting after a percentage of the new carpet python people that are you're after the small amount of percentage of people that might be interested in carpet python because they find them at a show or see a new morph at a show. Most of the people who become interested either find them on the forums or have seen carpet pythons that are somewhat interested, but something's going to drag them to it. So, you know, there's this trickle-down effect is already happening. The fact of that, you know, Eric has all these high-end animals, and there's all these people who are interested in watching what Eric's doing, and eventually they'll start getting into other people's hands. That's just with the depreciation of the market. It's already there. So the snow effect that you're talking about is already happening because Eric's going to have his double heads. So it's already going to start happening. That's going to start moving down. So it's already engaged.
the second the morph hits the market, it begins. The second it's no longer, the shows aren't really where people go to find the new morph. It's the forums. It's the Facebook pages, the websites, the companies. The second a morph comes out, the second a picture of something pipping an egg comes out, it begins. Because that's
I would recommend to people the way that I got into carpets and Morelia in general is just like, you know, and this is how I know that I love carpets. I mean, I have the ugliest jungle carpet you could possibly imagine. This thing is freaking fugly, man.
Yeah.
It is ugly as
hell. Yeah, he is disgusting.
It is so ugly, you know. But I really dig that snake. He's been with me for almost, God, it's, we're looking at 16 years. That snake's old, man. He's been around for a long time, and I've gone through many species. I've worked with many different types of species, and he's still in my collection. And it wasn't an expensive animal. He was $90. I picked him up. Now I'm dealing with animals that are, you know, way more money than that. You know, because I take carpets. So I didn't get drawn in by the fact that there was a morph. I got drawn in by people like Jason, people like Owen, people like Nick, that, you know,
people
talk
like
about
Mo.
Species and, you know, really, you know, made me excited about the species, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Not because there is the possibility. Don't get me wrong. You know, I dug that. I thought that was cool, you know, that the fact that there could be a snow carpet or, you know, an albino, and one day hopefully I would work with it, but I don't know. That's not all it's about for me, so.
Yeah, I mean, you're 100% right, you know, but I think in this day and age, I don't even know what percentage you could call it, but everybody who buys a snake wants to be a breeder. I mean, it's like the one time I was sitting there talking to Owen at his table, and some kid came up with his father, and he had a jungle, and he just said to Owen, listen, we just want to buy something to throw in with this and see what we get. You know, it's like at some point everybody wants to breed, you know, and then it comes down to a money thing, and everybody looks at the high-end stuff first. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
and transaction actually went is the guy came over with a female, wanted one of the boys, and he wanted it for a really cheap price because he had a female, and when I told him that this is the price because of the line and because of my speciality and all that stuff, he actually left, which is fine.
Yeah,
I don't care because I'd rather not sell it to him because he actually went by the table 2-3 times, and he's going to breed those jungles that he's going to pick up from someone else's table, and he's going to have a very rude awakening when he finally gets those babies to try to sell. So the high dollar mark isn't always what some people are after, especially when it comes to breeding. Some people just want to breed what they want to breed. Some people just want it as a project. Some people just want to have carpet pythons they can throw on their table for a certain amount of money. I have corn snakes right now, and the only reason I have corn snakes is because $10 on a table cover my table fees.
Yeah,
it's
the way
it goes.
And I love, I mean, to me, with my condos, I love the locale breeding. Like, I'm working with that Cyclops, you know, project right now. And in the spring, I want to work with a Biak. But when people contact me, you know, they're talking about, well, I saw this, you know, this genetic blue and all that. And I'm like, those are the high-end ones. And I just, you know, and then they don't want to talk anymore because when you're talking, you know, when you're just talking about normal Biaks, what I think are, you know, amazing-looking animals, you know, they want to talk about that high-end stuff, and it's like, you know, I understand, but it's not, that's not what I'm working with. You know, it's like that's what that attraction is with that high-end stuff first, you know. And I mean, I understand what you're, you know, I totally agree with what you're saying, but there is that level of, you know, that high-end stuff is, to me, brings them, you know, like they get more of an attention. The species will get more of an attention because
everything,
of that one
every morph out there starts as a high-end. You know, because basically the second the thing comes out with a stripes used to be $200-$300. Jags used to be $10,000, and now they're $100. So it's not necessarily it's the new thing. It's you know, the high end stuff isn't always what draws people to it. I would love a Chondro that stayed all red. That's just my appeal. The second somebody gets an all red Chondro, I'm all over it. But other people like the blues. It's a personal preference. It's not necessarily the high end. It's just that's usually what people are talking about at the time. That's usually what's on everybody's mind. Like, I had a Jag downstairs, a very large male, that Eric gave me to try to sell, and we couldn't get somebody to take it for $200. Now, 5-6 years ago, that Jag would have probably gone for $12,000-$13,000. So that's just the way it goes. Nobody cares about that because everybody's got wanting something else. So the morphs come and go with popularity and with appreciation. It goes quickly, too, especially with other animals like ball pythons and other things like that. So it's a double-edged sword. Again, you can cut yourself both ways.
Yeah, no, and I believe that. I mean, I believe that, you know, that with those high-end animals, it's going to change, you know, the landscape, so to speak, of carpet breeding, you know, but it's just one of those things. I think it's like a give and take. Like, you know, if you want to expand, if you want to open up, you know, people's eyes to carpet pythons, you know, you got to take that chance, and you got to take that chance that hopefully, yeah, they'll come in, they'll be fascinated by the snow, but then all of a sudden they'll fall in love with coastals. Because coastals are an amazing-looking animal, and it's a lot cheaper than, you know, going that route. And I think the more people you get into them, whether it is for eventually one day becoming a breeder or they just, you know, want to collect a couple of, you know, coastals and maybe some tigers. I mean, I still think, you know, one of the best tigers is that Russian tiger, the curtain line Russian tiger. They're amazing. You know, and I think somebody seeing them might think the same thing. And they're a lot easier to obtain than, you know, than that high-end stuff. But that's where that conversation was.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay.
It was a pleasure talking to you guys. Have a good holiday.
You too.
And I'll be listening whenever.
All right, man.
Thanks a lot, buddy.
All right, guys.
Yep.
All right, take it easy.
See you. There you go. Couple things before we aren't live anymore. The calendars are in the Morelia Python Radio calendar. They came in. They look awesome. So if you want to order one, PayPal is the preferred option. You can contact me at info@MoreliaPythonRadio.com, and we can hook that up for you to get it out to you. I don't know. I hope that they go out because I sent them out today, but with the holidays, I don't know if they get backlogged or whatnot. But
they usually will. Some people say not to ship out anything until after January or January 6th.
Yeah. So okay. Real quick too, before we're cut off and we go into
overtime,
the last show of the year, we got an exciting show lined up for when we come back.
Mm-hmm.
It is Nathan Garrod from that lady always bugs me in my ear. The heck, from Chimera Productions, Herpicult. Oh man, I'm getting tongue tied. Too many beers.
Wow.
Herpetoculturist and freelance wildlife manager. He's from Australia, and I don't know if you've seen some of his posts. I know he's posted on the Morelia Python Radio Facebook page, but pretty much he's looking at coastal carpets out in the wild. And we're going to talk to him about kind of like a field herping show, but Australian style. So
nice.
Should be good. I'm looking forward to talking to it. We're going to get into just what he does and what is it like at his day-to-day job. And also we're going to talk a little bit about his thoughts on, like, the diamond python and coastal pythons, interbreeding, and it should be a good show. What I'm trying to shoot for the month of January is that I wanted to have all Australian guests. So we have a couple more that are in the works, and hopefully we can make that happen. But I'm really excited about talking about the field herping type of idea. I thought it would be cool. So there's that. Let's see, what else? I don't know. Anything else, Owen, that you wanted to...
Please go over daily onto the Reptile Report and vote for Morelia Python Radio for Radio Show of the Year. They're going to be posting up the percentages around the 21st, so we'll probably be making a final push unless we're, like, insanely far ahead. But keep up the voting. We want to make this a Morelia Python year. All right?
Yes. Wouldn't that be cool? Morelia Python.
If you don't vote, I swear,
you're getting the hammer.
I'll sell everything and breed ball pythons. I swear to Christ.
Yeah. Oh no!
Don't make me do it. I don't want to do it. Don't make me do it.
Yeah, please, please, please.
I've written my suicide note. Don't make me sign it. Anyway,
what will I do for a co-host? I can't have a co-host.
You won't. You won't be. It's terrible. It's over. So.
So, I mean, you know, 2013 has been a great year. We've had some great guests on. We had some great moments. Thank you for everybody that has come on and given your time and, you know, and trying to push the hobby forward and get people excited about Morelia. You know, really, we appreciate it because, you know, sometimes these – like poor Casper, he's getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and it's just, oh man, it's all kind of craziness, but you know, they did it because they love to talk reptiles and we're going to have a good 2014 with, like I said, it being even cooler. We have another Chondro round table lined up. You know, of course we'll have another carpet round table. I'm trying to, get the guys from US Arc to come on and talk. You know, a couple more highlights. I'm sure we'll be hearing about Sean and the forum. I'd like to get him to come on and talk about what's going on and the different things there. Hopefully we can get the chat back up and going over there. During the show, that was always fun. But we got Tinley Park coming up. Carpet Fest on the Northwest, you know. So there's a lot of things in 2014. I'm sure you'll see in some more world first, and as far as from Paul Harris and Ollie over Precision. So should be a cool year. Hopefully the Bolens Pythons guys are able to knock it out with another clutch of Bolens. You know, I just want to, like I said, say thanks to everybody, all their support. I can't forget the guys over Corrales Radio. You know, I really, really admire the fact that they stepped up and, you know, they're pushing something that they're passionate about. And they're doing a great job, by the way. I mean, I've been listening to their shows while I'm cleaning snakes. And, you know, I'm really digging Corrales. It's pretty cool. They're very similar to Morelia, and man, there's some beautiful colors and patterns, and they're just cool. But more research has to be done for me before I can jump in. But
we'll have a pair next week. So
Jeff and Dayton, they're doing a good job over there. So you can go and check out. They got some really cool episodes lined up. I think their first show back for the new year, they're going to be talking to Nick Mutton. That's January 5th, and he's going to be talking about Corrales and when it's split from the other boas, and should be a cool cool episode. And Brian Fisher on the 19th, he's going to be talking about setting up a naturalistic setup. That's cool. And everybody knows Brian Fisher from the Chondro Roundtable. He's one of the guys there. And then our good buddy Justin Julander is going to be talking Brettles pythons. This is off topic. So
cool.
Pretty cool. So be sure to check it out. Their website is corralisradio.weebly.com. So go over there and check out what those guys are doing. Want to say thanks to Sean for the forums and all the work he's doing over there. I that was one of the topics that I wanted to hit on tonight, a little more in depth, the whole forum versus Facebook, because the guys over on Corralis Radio were kind of talking about it from our prior conversation when we had Nick on. But, you know, show your love to the forum, man. I mean, really, that's I can't say that enough. That's going to be such a tool later on for new people. And it's I get the whole Facebook thing, and I get why people use it and the way they use it. And I'm not knocking that. But at the same time, I don't know. Maybe I'm just old-fashioned. I'm like Nick said, getting grumpy in my old age.
Yeah.
Get off my lawn, you kids.
Lawn. You're damn kids and get a haircut. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Who else? You know, we have to send out a big shout-out to Mr. Chris Behoff. You know, I love him, hate him. His Carpet Classified page, genius. Good mm-hmm. show there. That's a Facebook group page that he has over there. If you're looking for a carpet python, if you're interested in a carpet python, I would suggest going over there and check it out. Mm-hmm. There's tons to choose from, a lot of stuff. Chris is a good guy, so be sure to check that out. Who else do we have to thank? You know, I'm going to get off here, and then we're going to forget somebody.
Of course.
And I feel like a jerk. But, you know, I don't know. I guess that's it. So for 2 weeks, you won't hear from us. So
no. Go yeah.
Listen to our back episodes or check out Corralis Radio or, you know, whatever floats your boat. But I hope that everybody has a nice holiday and, you know, if you want to keep up with what's going on with me, go over to ebmorelia.com, and you can check out what I have going on. Also, don't forget the calendar. I have limited supply. I can get more, but we're almost out already. So if you're interested in one of those, make sure you contact me, info@moreliapythonradio.com, and we'll be sure to get that out for you. That's all I got, Owen.
Sweet. Well, what I got is you can go to rogue-reptiles.com, check out all the stuff we got going on at Rogue. You can also find Rogue at facebook.com. We got really nothing cooking around because of the holiday, but, you know, we will see you guys all in 2014, and we hope everybody out there listening has a safe and happy holiday. And we will catch you next year for some more Morelia Python Radio. Good night.